black cat just crossed my trail. Well, I'm superstitious. Black cat just crossed my trail. Down to sweep me with no broom. I just might get put in jail.
That was the great Savoy Brown and their version of the Willie Dixon classic Superstitious. And this week, the irrelevant rock and roll and music show looks at the blues. Hello, I'm your host, Jay Hoskins, and across the studio from me, rather than my usual co-host, Crafty, is my good friend and blues aficionado, Denis Theriault. Welcome to the program, Denis.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on. Okay, the blues. A lot has been talked about. A lot has been written. Where do you come in? Where did you first get involved with blues music?
Well, growing up as a little duffer in the Maritimes, one of the things I was interested in is the radio. And when I would go to bed at night, listen to the radio, and every once in a while, I would hear some blues, not knowing what that was. I was always interested in what has been called the heartbeat music, which is intrinsic to the blues. And I have to say, I found my home. And building on that, growing up, I was always interested in the form. One of the first things I have ever heard was Muddy Waters live in concert, which I believe was on the CBC, and it absolutely floored me. I had to get me more of that. So taking off from there. And of course, as a kid, I was always interested in rock music, hard rock music, the usual bands, Santana, Deep Purple, Grand Funk, Black Sabbath. And one of the things that interested me a lot was the guitar players. And the fact that in rock music, the part of the song that always had me transfixed was the solo. And taking that back to, and also what was interesting about the solo is that these musicians always had an outlet to express their personalities. And that was always one of the things about blues music that interested me, is that you had a basic, you had the basic background, the music, the beat, and all these artists that could express their individuality, even though they were basically playing from the same form.
That's interesting. Jeff Beck is quoted as saying that when he goes to the fretboard, he wants to go someplace he's never gone before. So, you know, it sort of embodies that idea of the solo. Was there a particular store or outlet that you were able to get access to these blues artists in Moncton? And more important, when you asked them, the people go like, what? Who? Huh?
So I guess it was sort of like the blues had to break into Moncton. Like, you know, like it was not something that was readily available. It was something you actually had to go hunt out.
Well, I was lucky enough that the local Sam the Record Man, some of my friends were working there.
An important Canadian institution.
and because of that, we had access to the catalogs. So I had a chance to order a lot of my music. And some of my friends were also interested in the blues. So we would zero in on specific artists, and then we would bring the material in. Now, because of that, that could get to be a little bit expensive because you're dealing with imports.
Even with
American,
the discount
British,
the staff members have.
Even with the discount and the famous layaway policies, I was able to put my hands on a lot of music.
just been listening to Elmore James, Dust Your Broom. And this week, the Irrelevant Rock and Roll Music Show looks at the blues.
You're listening to Radio 2069, Rock and Beyond.
What kind of blues music were you attracted to initially?
Well, the first thing I heard was the Chicago blues, and which was probably the most common blues that was out there.
What are the main categories of blues?
In the interest of keeping this as general, because the blues comes in many flavors, many shades, whether it's rhythm and blues, jazz, I'm going to keep this discussion to a minimum of four categories. The Mississippi Delta blues, the Chicago blues, the Texas blues scene, and also the British blues scene.
And pretty well we're just going to deal with three of them today, because we'll be dealing with the British blues scene later on. We're going to do a special show about the Yardbirds and Fleetwood Mac, two very, very important bands who brought the blues genre into rock and roll. You're nodding, so I guess you mean that's okay. Oh, that's good. Okay.
I thought that was rhetorical.
That was rhetorical? So, you were exposed to artists like Muddy Waters. What other artists?
Well, soon after Muddy Waters, one of the my big influences, because I've also played the music, and one of my biggest influences was Buddy Guy, proponent of the Chicago blues scene, an artist who spans now almost, I guess, more than 50 years since he has arrived. He arrived in Chicago, working in the steel mills, and then becoming a musician. And I have to say that I followed his career through the years. And one of the sad commentaries about Buddy Guy's career is that he was relatively unrecorded from 1970 to essentially the mid-80s. And I still don't understand how that has happened. He's a major influence on you name the guitarist, and they won't go very far without mentioning Buddy Guy as an influence. You know, Clapton, all the major blues guitar players will throw in that Buddy Guy was a source of inspiration.
Wasn't it Jeff Beck that one of the people that brought him back into the spotlight? I mean, on Damn Right I Got the Blues?
Well, Jeff Beck, also Eric Clapton, having some shows and bringing Buddy Guy as a guest. But yeah, his career went full swing with that album called Damn Right I've Got the Blues.
With Mustang Sally.
Mustang Sally.
I think it won a Grammy.
It won a Grammy and finally brought in that money he had been looking for a long time. And he was, you know, he was deservedly so. You know, it was about time he got paid for all those hard, long years slugging through playing the blues.
Walking down through the-
That was an early recording of the maestro himself, Buddy Guy, strutting his stuff with The First Time I Met the Blues. And this is still the irrelevant rock and roll and music show. And I'm here with my good friend, Denis Theriault, talking about the blues. You mentioned, we're going to talk about the three mage things here, the Mississippi Delta, the Chicago, and the Texas blues. Could you talk about each area and sort of give me a couple of artists that come from each area and maybe some songs that we should seek out or you might have heard?
Well, starting from the Mississippi Delta, which is the birthplace of the blues, essentially the field workers, the African Americans who were brought over from Africa as slaves, working in the fields.
There's an excellent Scorsese documentary made on that whole era. About talking about the coming from Africa and actually bringing rhythm, fife and drums and all that kind of different things into the South, and different types of blues music that broke off into those different areas. It was very interesting.
Actually, that was an excellent documentary, and the workers in the fields, I guess in an effort to document their woes, develop the music. Now, the music was responsible for a couple of things. First of all, it kept a beat during the day so that they could keep working. So it kept the cadence of the work. And also, it gave them, through their songs, a chance to document their experience. It also had another motive, which was to communicate between the workers.
It was like a code. It was like a secret code.
It was a coded language. So there were situations where if some of the slaves were breaking out, some of the songs would give out the information as to where, when they were going to break out, where they were going to break out, which side of the river they were going to go up. So it's pretty interesting stuff. So
coming for the airways like, we're going to break out tonight.
Yeah, I don't think it was...
it wasn't that blatant.
It wasn't as blatant as that.
Okay, that's good. And people, some of the artists that came out of that...
Probably one of the most famous is Robert Johnson, to come out in the famous Crossroads story where he allegedly sold his soul to the devil to play the music. And... There seem to be a lot of stories that Robert Johnson may have been mentally ill, and this is what pushed his art, to play as well as he did, to write as many songs as he did.
It's a man who really didn't come into prominence until after he died. Really, like, people just took his music and. You know, if you a British blues artist, where's your salt? You have done a Robert Johnson song, and that's very interesting. The TV show Supernatural, which is on right now, basically did a whole episode based on the Crossroads and Robert Johnson making a deal with the devil, and people making deals with the devil as the years went along. It's really interesting. The whole thing about if you go in the middle of the crossroads and you dig down, you'll find a box with different things that are part of that person's life, and they make a deal, and they get a certain amount of time, and then their debt is called, right? And Robert Johnson died very young.
I think that was the lot of many of those musicians. It was a treacherous occupation when you were singing about love gone wrong, singing about affairs, singing and
some you were involved in.
Usually, that was the case, is that you were the own subject of your own song.
Yeah, not like my woman dubbed it. Your woman dubbed me wrong.
So it wasn't unusual to have musicians basically killed on the bandstand.
I went to the crossroads.
So Robert Johnson is Mississippi Fred McDowell from
Mississippi
that?
Fred McDowell, and
he's so raw, you know. Like I heard him when I think I was too young when I first heard him, because I heard him and I just went, there's not enough here for me here. But now I hear him now and I go, there's just so much emotion packed into each, you know, line of these songs.
Actually, it's interesting you say that, because for many years, I would listen to blues musicians, electric blues musicians, and the music from the country or the non-electric version of the blues, I didn't get. I didn't understand, and it took me a while to essentially go backwards. You know, starting from the city, the electric, and moving back to understand what those musicians were playing, how they were playing it. Again, I couldn't believe that one musician, one guitar could tell you that much of a story. Well, boy, was I wrong. And listening to players like Lightnin' Hopkins, who just packs so much information, so much rhythm, so much groove, and then there are the lyrics. Again, they are documenting their lives.
Yeah. Well, people like Leadbelly, I mean, their first recordings were recorded in prison. You know, he was in there. I think he was in there for murder. I think it was a number of blues musicians that ended up being in prison, and some of their craft came from there. It's really really interesting that way. Okay, so if you were starting in the Mississippi Delta blues, if you wanted to get your foot wet in the Mississippi River kind of thing, where would you suggest you would start? I mean, you know, an entry point where people would feel comfortable, who are not real a blues aficionados by yourself, you know, who could get in there.
I would still recommend that you listen to Robert Johnson. I think he encapsulates a lot of the virtues of the Mississippi blues music.
And it won't take you that long, because there's only 29 songs that he actually wrote.
Yeah, 29, but almost all of them are famous.
Yeah.
And Leadbelly, yeah, would be another musician. Blind Lemon Jefferson would be another excellent starting point. Mississippi Fred McDowell. I guess you could argue B.B. King, who does come from Mississippi.
Who's just celebrated his 80th birthday a little while ago.
Just his 80th birthday, still, well, probably not going as strong anymore. I think he's celebrating his 80th birthday, but if I remember, I read something that he's in ill health. He suffers from diabetes, but he's definitely slowing down. So if you have a chance, go see him now, because there are probably not that many more concerts.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, this is the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. And once again, I'm Jay Hoskins, your host. And across from me is my good friend and blues aficionado, Denis Theriault. And we just listened to Robert Johnson, The Crossroads, which is an excellent example of what Denis terms to be Mississippi Delta blues. And now we're going to move on to some of the other blues chapters or sections. Let's go to Texas blues.
Well, with the essentially in the U.S., the emancipation of the slaves, and also the fact that there were no jobs in Mississippi, the workers started migrating to different areas, some of them moving up north to Chicago, and also moving west out into Texas, so spawning the Texas blues movement. Now, I guess you could characterize the Texas blues movement as it really started developing in the 1930s, 1940s, with the advent of the electric guitar or the electrified instruments. And one proponent of that style is T-Bone Walker. Now, it is said that probably he is the blues musician who has affected the form the most. His style of playing, sort of that bluesy, jazzy, has, if you play blues guitar, there's a good chance that T-Bone Walker has crossed your path. He has affected everybody.
You mentioned jazzy. You think that came from influence from like Charlie Christian?
Not necessarily Charlie Christian. He had, being from Texas, but he had a career as a musician in California. And where he was, he played in certain bands that had horn sections. And then coming back, that seemed to have quite an effect on his playing and on his writing.
So that's a staple of Texas blues, is the horn
section. The horns are a staple of the Texas blues.
So why is someone like Johnny Winter and Stevie Ray Vaughan lumped into that Texas blues thing? Because they wouldn't know a horn if it bit them.
It's interesting. Those two musicians also come from a rock background. Okay. And or the rock band format. And especially Stevie Ray Vaughan. Back in the early 80s, the blues scene was dead. And along came this young whippersnapper by the name of Stevie Ray Vaughan. And Johnny Winter has always been plying his trade with, among others, Muddy Waters. And
he did that great Muddy Waters album, Heart Again. He produced that. And you could just hear the love coming from that man when he was producing Muddy Waters. I mean, there's one song, I can't remember what it is, but basically he's like yelping in the background going, yeah, yeah, hey. You know, he's just really, really happy to be there. I'm sure he got paid for doing it, but I think he would have done it if he had to pay to do it himself, right? You know, it's just like, it's terrific.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything gonna be all right this morning. Oh, yeah. My mother said I'm gonna be the greatest man alive. But now I'm a man, way past 21. I want you to believe me, baby. I have lots of fun. I'm a man. Your own lovers, man. I'm a man. Yeah.
you mean? Sitting on the outside, just me and my mate. You know I made the moon, honey. Come up 2 hours late. Wasn't that a man? Yeah! I spell him H-I-N. That rather than man. Man. The lion I shoot and will never miss. When I make love to a woman, she can't resist. I think I go down to old Cassie's too. I'm gonna bring back my second cousin, that's little John the Conqueror. Now that line, I can make love to you, woman, in 5 minutes' time. Ain't that a man?
That was the great Muddy Waters from the album Hard Again, with guitar enthusiasm yelps in the background by Johnny Winter. And we're talking Texas blues with my good friend Denise Theriault. Well, we started talking about Stevie Ray Vaughan and we seemed to have moved over to Johnny Winter. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Now, Johnny Winter has been at it a long time. And, you know, just judging from his discography and the large share of it to the blues and to a true version of the blues, because when you were part of Muddy Waters band, you weren't allowed to flash too much. You really had to stick to the pure version of the blues. And getting back to Stevie Ray Vaughan, as I said, back in the early 80s, this young guitar slinger coming from Austin, which is an absolute hotbed of the blues, brother of Jimmy Vaughan, who played with the Fabulous Thunderbirds. And Jimmy, influenced by a whole bunch of people, namely Jimi Hendrix, Albert King, Albert Collins, and just synthesizing all these influences into this this brand new style. Because once you heard Stevie Ray Vaughan, you knew you had heard Stevie. He had a style all his own. you name it, shuffle, slow blues, fast blues, he could do it all.
It first came to prominence, oddly enough, in pop albums with on David Bowie's Let's Dance. His guitar work is all over Let's Dance. It's really interesting.
Actually, David Bowie had asked him to be, what started as a guest appearance on the album, but he asked him to be a permanent musician as part of his band, but the story goes that it didn't pay well enough, and Stevie was more eager to start his own solo career.
Well, not well enough for him to give up his own band.
Well, probably as a blues musician. I guess he was only being paid scale.
Yeah. Though Earl Slick afterwards, who came on that tour, said that he was being compensated quite well and he didn't really understand what Stevie's problem was, but maybe Stevie was just used to different. I don't know. But anyway, that's pop music, and pop music is another whole world than blues music, and you know, we just won't put the two of them together. Though they occasionally cross, it's interesting. It's interesting that there's cross-pollinization between Stevie Ray Vaughan and Johnny Winter, because Tommy Shannon, who played bass on the first couple of Johnny Winter albums, ended up being part of Stevie Ray Vaughan's permanent rhythm section, along with Chris Layton, who was not on the first three Johnny Winter albums. But Tommy Shannon did join him, and it was really interesting. It was a sort of like a passing on of like the roots of blues rock onto the new head of blues rock, which is going to be Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Well, Stevie was lucky to come in when he came in, and he was the right musician at the right time. Although if you read some of his history, when he appeared in 1985 at the Montreux Jazz Festival, he was not well received at all. He was jeered by the audience. The Montreux Jazz Festival is, I don't know if everybody knows, it is a showcase of different musical styles under the heading of the Jazz Festival. If you look on TV now, you'll see rock bands that are appearing at the Jazz Festival. So back then, in a blues showcase, he appeared with Double Trouble, the aforementioned Shannon and Layton, played their set, and the crowd just went nuts on them. I believe there's a DVD of the 85 concert where you can hear the crowd not really taking well to them.
Can you only buy it on corners with people in, like, you know, smelly raincoats that have it under their arm or something?
Or your PC off the internet, the CD internet. Yeah. But to add to that story, I believe that they had made the trip from the U.S. I can't remember where in the U.S., but they were dog tired when they got on stage. But apparently, if you listen to the performance, it's a very good performance. So there was nothing wrong with the performance. The music, the crowd just didn't take to it. And from that, Stevie took it upon himself and made it a mission that he would succeed. He would take this same music and succeed with it.
Oddly enough, suffered almost the same fate that Buddy Holly suffered with the plane crash. You know, it's kind of like the holodeck, you know, on Star Trek Next Generation. Don't go in. Don't go in there anymore. You know, rock musicians, don't fly in small planes with two engines. It just doesn't seem to work. You know, Patsy Cline, Leonard Skinner. I mean, these guys, you know, you should just take the bus. Take the bus.
Well, by the time of his untimely death, he had grown into quite the legend of Stevie Ray Vaughan. He had become to stand, you know, he was the it musician. He represented the whole form.
And it's interesting because I don't know if a lot of influence came from, but certainly a lot of passion came from his brother Jimmy, who has roots that go even deeper than Stevie has in the Texas blues area.
Yeah, if you listen to both of them, I guess
there is Jimmy, that one album called Brother to Brother, I think, that they're on, isn't it?
Yes, not one of my favorite albums.
Not one of your favorite albums. So
I guess one of those
civil rivalry, you know, in the studio.
Tick tock. not one of the better efforts. If you take the output of both brothers, and it's funny that both of them would get together and produce such a. It, to my mind, such a generic effort.
So you think it's one of those bad albums by good artists we should examine?
Actually,
in the future?
That one could be included in our air segment. I could have quite a lot to say about that. But to get back to Jimmy, if there's anything he, to me, was a little closer to the source, a guy who played it closer to the vest, you know, much truer. I guess it's a difficult thing to quantify, but you know, playing it straighter than Stevie, whose influences were much more influenced by rock, Jimi Hendrix, and guys like Albert King, Albert Collins. So his playing was a lot, had much more histrionics to it, a lot more fire, where Jimmy was the consummate blues accompanist. You know, great soloist, but played it much closer to the
and,
best.
And Jimmy, the biggest reference for Jimmy would be the Fabulous Thunderbirds. Really?
He really came to prominence.
Yeah.
With Kim Wilson and the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
Great album called Tough Enough. By the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
Has excellent
great,
album.
Some excellent songs on there. If you're going to check out some of the Fabulous Thunderbirds, start there. It's really, you know. And if you must, go to the Cocktail soundtrack. but we won't go there. So much great music, so little time. Well, Crafty and I will be back next week with our regular program. But until then, this is Jay Hoskins saying, a relevant rock and roll and music show, over and out.
You've been listening to the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. I mean, what did you think you were listening to? I mean, really?